And welcome back to the SEC on CBS podcast here on CBS Sports. I am your host, Chip Patterson. Joining me on the line today is Tom Fornelli. Hello, Tom. How are you doing?
I am fantastic. How are you?
I'm good. Tom coming to us, of course, live from Chicago. He is very, very excited about Mitchell Trubisky, the greatest quarterback to ever be drafted, number two overall ever in the history of football. Are you excited?
In a strange way, I'm excited in that whether I agree with the decision or not, or whether I think Mitch Trubisky's going to be any good on the NFL level, by doing this, I am more interested in bearish football than I have been in a very long time. So I'm excited in that it made me care a little more again, because I was kind of numb to Chicago Bears football these last few years, because you kind of knew what the end was no matter what. At least now, there's, you know, it's like it could go either way. I mean, think of
anything is possible.
Listen, 2 weeks ago, I was looking at a Bears team with Mike Glennon as its starting quarterback. Now I'm looking at a Bears team with Mike Glennon as its starting quarterback. But once they're eliminated from playoff contention,
we get to see. I am really excited about this NC State UNC quarterback competition.
It is. There's gonna be fights during practice, man.
Oh man, everyone's gotta take their sides. But Tom, the reason we join here today is so that we are gonna be able to give a little bit of a precursor to something we're doing on the website. Always good when we can tag team content. Yeah.
Tag teaming.
We've got the coach rankings coming up, and we need to come right off the bat with this, because Tom has written the coach rankings at CBS Sports for the last 2 years or 3 years?
Two or three.
And it is a combination of a lot of ballots. It's just Tom is the one who does the write-up. So fans that are angry, make sure that you know Tom made all the decisions.
It's no different than it has been the last few years. We put these rankings out, and it's, why do you hate my coach?
Yeah, and see, it's great for me because I get to submit a ballot. I get to have a say-so in these coach rankings, but then totally avoid all of the criticism once the rankings come out, because it's all directed at you.
Yeah, and I get hate for West Virginia because of you, too.
That's true. I'm sorry,
thanks,
West Virginia.
Chip.
I'm sorry,
thanks
West Virginia fans.
For making my life miserable all the time.
When we do the best in state thing at the end of the summer, like best college football program in each of the states that have college football teams at the FBS level, I will no doubt have West Virginia over Marshall, a decision that I reversed last year and was reminded of frequently.
I think you should double down and just leave.
Just go Marshall.
Marshall?
Nah, man. When we have the newly elected governor trying to work back channels to maybe make a change at head coach, I just am not saying that's not a sign of confidence in the stability of the football program right now.
Now, what if your article was the genesis of the governor saying, oh my God, they think Marshall's better than West Virginia. We got to get rid of Holiday. That's the state. That's the flagship school of the state.
No, he's a Marshall guy. He wants Marshall to be better. He got mad that they fell off. He's
like one year. It's a weird story.
It's a weird story.
That's one of the great things about college football, though, is that
it gets political.
It's something governors care about.
Right.
And feel the need to openly opine on.
So when you are filling out, and we are, by the way, only ranking Power 5 coaches, 1 through 65, which is all the Power 5 coaches plus Notre Dame's Brian Kelly. What defines the ranking for you? What are you looking for, and sort of what was your approach? Because we intentionally, I think, leave the qualifications a little vague, and that might be frustrating for some, but the hope is that everyone gets to have their own interpretation of it, and when you get a consensus from across lots of people, again, not only at CBS Sports, but also at 24/7 Sports, that we get to everyone's interpretation of, you know, who's the best coach in college football right now can have a different play. So let's say for this, just to get us started, like, did you take into consideration the entire body of work for a coach, or is it specifically sort of where they stand among Power 5 coaches at that particular school?
I didn't really have a set you know, set of guidelines that I was definitely going to follow for every coach. For me, it was just a combination of what you've actually accomplished mixed with kind of like a thing of, if I was an AD looking to hire a coach, what would my ranking be of who I wanted to hire more than anybody else?
I like that.
Now, for some, obviously, like for the guy that's number one on my list, Nick Saban, which I think is the obvious one. I don't think I'm spoiling it.
What?
No. Yeah, I got Saban at number one. Now, where I got kind of on that is Saban obviously has accomplished more than any other coach in college football right now. He's the easy choice at number one. But if I was actually an AD looking to hire a coach, he might not be my first choice as someone to hire simply because of his age. And I want somebody that's going to be there to build for a while. So, but just overall, you could not look past Saban. But those were pretty much my major qualifications. Like it was, what have you done? And then when it got close between groups of guys, he's like, well, which one would I rather have coaching my team?
I had trouble with some established coaches that maybe are in different places, like a Mark Richt at Miami. You know, do you judge him just based on what's happened at Miami, or Bobby Petrino at Louisville? Are we just taking the temperature of the Cardinals right now, or do we take into consideration his entire body of work? Even, you know, like Bob Stoops. You know, there's like Bob Stoops is unbelievably accomplished, and he's created a machine. And if you just totaled up like career wins and conference titles, he's top three, top four. But, you know, I was feeling the vibes of some other coaches that maybe also have a national championship, but not necessarily the longevity of Bob Stoops. I was very much an in the moment type ranking when I was laying these out.
Yeah, I get that, but I still have Stoops at number four on my list.
Ooh, nice.
Which I know a lot of people will probably take exception to. I'm guessing of all the ballots that are in, I have Stoops higher than most.
Do you have David Shaw top seven?
I have him top five, actually.
Yeah, see, all right, so David Shaw doesn't have a national championship, but in terms of good coach, I consider him, like, right there in the handful, like, one of the best in all of college football.
Yeah, I have Shaw ranked a spot higher than Harbaugh, which is going to drive Michigan fans absolutely crazy. But it's the fact that it's why I don't overlook that the job Harbaugh did at Stanford to... Because when he took over at Stanford, that was a program that was nothing near what it is now. But you have to give Shaw credit for not only stepping in after Harbaugh left and maintaining it, but improving it. Because the one thing we forget, I think, too casually when it comes to evaluating Jim Harbaugh, we all consider him a great coach. And it's hard to argue that he's not. But he hasn't won a conference title in the FBS.
Right. He gets a lot of... when he was an Orange Bowl winner with Stanford, did they not win the conference? No. Was that like an Oregon conference title or something?
That was an Oregon year, and they just got a BCS Bowl as an at-large. Whereas, you know, Shaw's won a couple of Pac-12 titles and gone to the Rose Bowl at Stanford. That's something Harbaugh never did. And Harbaugh at Michigan, he's clearly revitalized the program, but he's yet to win a division, let alone the conference title. So... When I was looking at that, but I think Shaw just traditionally is one of the more underrated coaches. And I think that a lot of people are just too quick to look over the fact that they think Harbaugh built Stanford. But it's one thing to build a program. It's an entirely different skill set to maintain it year in and year out. And considering some of the limitations on Stanford as far as being in the Pac-12, which is generally not as enticing of a conference as far as recruiting goes, you know, it's hard to recruit the Southeast from Stanford,
right? For sure,
where a lot of the better talent is. There's a ton of talent in California, true, but everybody on the West Coast is recruiting California. And then just with academic limitations, I think what he's been able to do there is just phenomenal. And if you look at the coaching landscape, it's like it's hard. I have four coaches ahead of him, and I would hear arguments for other coaches to be worth ahead of him. But I think it's a very solid case to be a top five for David Shaw.
I think that one thing that stood out to me when I was laying out my rankings is that there have been a lot of changes at big time jobs in the last 5 years. And even in the last couple, but you know, we look at where Gary Pinkel probably would have stood among his colleagues in these rankings. Yeah, I pulled up some of the old ones in the past just to, you know, as a reference point. And I was looking back, and like we had Les Miles, we had Gary Pinkel. You know, there's there's a whole new face, you know, Mark Helfrich. You know, there are new faces at a lot of big programs, and what it's led to is like this big jumble in the middle where I felt really good about the group of like 8 to 10 or so at the top. A lot of first year and second year coaches. Remember, this is just among Power Five, but so a lot of first and second year coaches ended up between like 50 and 65. But between between like 15 and 50, I was having a hard time separating that group out into tiers.
There's a whole lot of similar. Like there's, I was having the same exact problem, which is where for me where it got to the situation where it was just. Came more boiled down to, well, who would I rather have?
Right. Like I've got David Cutcliffe high, not only because I'm a total Duke homer, but because he's just been there. You know what I'm saying? Like he just has a good resume, a good body of work, one where I'm going to favor David Cutcliffe over Kirby Smart because he's just more proven.
Well, I've got Cutcliffe way ahead of Kirby.
I think I've got him about 16 spots ahead or something like that.
You want to know how many spots I have Cutcliffe ahead of Kirby Smart?
Where do you have, this is the SEC on CBS podcast. Where do you have Kirby Smart?
I have David Cutcliffe at 15.
I've got him at 19.
Kirby Smart. I've got Kirby Smart at 59.
Woo! Okay, I mean.
It's not a question on what he's going to be able to do at Georgia. It's more of it's what's he done.
I think Matt Campbell's a good coach, but he's 60.
I have Matt Campbell at 60 as well.
Yeah. No, I mean, I get it.
It's like what you were saying. It's with the first, second year guys that barely have any resume. I mean, Kirby Smart was a great defensive coordinator at Alabama under Nick Saban, but as a head coach, he hasn't really proven anything to me yet. So, you know, it's hard for me to really put him any higher than that compared to guys who have at least been doing it for a few years. Now, Kirby Smart's somebody who could easily be in the top 20 after next season.
Ignored in the same way that I was giving bonus points to Kirby for just thinking that he's probably a good coach, I gave bonus points to Mark D'Antonio because I know he's a good coach, even though Michigan State had a bad year and is in sort of a tenuous position in the Big Ten East picture right now. Like if we were spinning this out moving forward, like Michigan State stock would be a sleeper stock, right?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, it's hard to really get a read. You expect just based on, like you said, last year was just bad. But you would think that based on what they'd done there for the most part the last few years, if Michigan State's suddenly good again, you're not going to be surprised. But it's just you look at that landscape right now and with Ohio State, Michigan, and now Penn State seemingly being, you know, reborn. It's not easy. It's not easy going for Michigan State right now. So you also have to wonder that even though Mark D'Antonio has proven to be a really good coach, it's somewhat hard to imagine Michigan State being the team that wins 10, 11 games on an annual basis anymore at this point.
No, I mean, that is disappointing because they had reached that. They got it like two to three years of double digit wins, you know, build the way that, a coach has his, you know, 5-7 year plan, everything like they built it out and now it's going to be tough. I've got him in the top 10 because I think he is a good coach, but I recognize that if we're talking about the way these coaches are trending up and down, that's one where I put him in there. And then I was like, ooh, I don't know when we come back next year, if he's still going to be there.
Yeah, it could fall. I've got him at 13 myself, and it was hard. I had considered him in the top 10, but I just put another couple guys in there because mostly, like you were just saying, there is that I don't know. Things could be going the wrong way because as good of a coach as he is and as wonderful a job as he did at Michigan State, he was also taking advantage of Michigan and Penn State not being Michigan and Penn State at that time. And now that Michigan and Penn State are getting back to being the programs you expect them to be, like I said, it's going to be a lot more difficult for Michigan State to be as strong as it had been, which won't make D'Antonio any worse of a coach, but compared to accomplishments of what other guys will be accomplishing, I could see him sliding down in the next couple of years.
I mean, we were out here with Les Miles up in the top 10, and then he was out of a job. Like, our rankings are by no means equivalent to job stability.
That's the industry.
Yeah.
Right there.
Well, some words on another industry. that not all ingredients are created equal. No, Tom. Fresh, high-quality ingredients make a real difference, so it's important to know where your food comes from. The good people at Blue Apron, they have incredible partnerships with local farms and fisheries so that they can be able to bring you the very best pre-portioned ingredients for an easy meal, all prepared in 40 minutes or less. Blue Apron's freshness guarantee promises that every ingredient in your delivery arrives ready to cook, or they will make it right. And you can check out this week's menu and get your first three meals free with free shipping by going to blueapron.com/SEC. You'll love how good it feels and tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. That's blueapron.com/SEC. Blue Apron, a better way to cook.
You should do it, seriously.
I do.
The girlfriend and I are Blue Apron subscribers, and I've loved it. Tonight we'll be having some lemongrass burgers for dinner from Blue Apron.
That,
you know, we just was delivered yesterday, and tonight we'll be making the first of our three meals of the week. And I gotta say, we've been doing it for a little over a month, Chip, but I'm yet to have a meal from Blue Apron that I didn't enjoy quite a bit.
I have messed up a meal, but that was only on me. That's just my own damn fault. It was a timing issue, you know. I didn't read it all. I would say that you got to make sure you read through all the instructions first. It'll make you make way better decisions in the pressure of the moment when that stovetop is popping and you need to start making moves.
Well, I will say there was one pizza we made. And we had, you know, they give you the dough and you're making it ourselves. And the shape of the dough did not quite end up looking as nice as it looked in the pictures when the professionals made it. But it still tasted pretty damn good.
Your ancestors. SMH-ing.
They are. Well, you know, I'm sorry to all my dead ancestors. I couldn't make the perfect triangle. It was more of a oblong oval.
Oh yeah, it was like a little egg shape with some bumps on it.
Yeah, it was still damn tasty, man.
Still good. Interesting, you know, on the topic of coach rankings, I wanted to run through some interesting cases because, you know, when I was looking at that jumble in the middle that we mentioned, kind of between number 15 and number 50 in our ballots, where you've got a lot of good coaches who maybe haven't had success. You've got coaches that have had success and maybe have not been able to replicate it. Like, you know, for example, the Arizona schools, like Rich Rodriguez at Arizona, Todd Graham at Arizona State, both made it to the Pac-12 title game. And that is an accomplishment. And that's, you know, something that a lot of other people haven't. But at the time, you know, right now, I don't know if I'm an AD, if they're on the top of my list necessarily. And another difficult situation to look at is the coaches that haven't been at their current stop for long. So I wanted to run through, first of all, some of these year one coaches who I imagine will be near the back half of the rankings, but that does not mean that they are not good coaches or that they won't have a bright future. And so we wanted to just sort of run through a couple of these and see like what your expectations are. And begin where we've got the, you know, it is being promoted as a culture shift because anything from the former administration or the former regime is now, you know, carries with it a big negative box of baggage. It is also a shift in style on the field, and this is Matt Rhule at Baylor. You know, we got the I formation, we're going to do smash mouth. The Big 12 is going one way, and now they're going to try to skew the other way. Are you buying the shift, the transition? Do you think it's something that will work? As Rhule tries again, we are going to analyze what he's doing on the field, but I imagine too, you've also just got a whole lot of meetings and a whole lot of work that has to do with changing everything off the field around that program as well.
Yeah. Listen, I really like Matt Rhule as a coach, and I love the idea that what Baylor's doing is I've written many times. And as I've mentioned on this podcast plenty of times, I am a firm believer that if your entire conference is doing one thing, you want to go, you want to do the other. So when you look at the Big 12 and you see all the, you know, chucking the ball, you know, widespread four or five receiver sets, throwing the ball over. If you could do something different and be the one team in the Big 12 that is running a pro style I form kind of attack that just gives them something different, I think it gives you a small advantage every week, no matter who you're playing. My fear is whether or not it works. I don't know if Matt Rhule will get the time. because he's in a sticky situation, not just into what he's stepping into and what has been the main story at Baylor, but also the fact that he has to replace Art Briles, who, for all we want to say about the way his career at Baylor ended, this is still the guy that came and took over a program that was just absolutely nothing.
Though he won a Big 12 title.
Yeah, and he made Baylor a real power in the Big 12 with his style of football. So all these Baylor fans right now came to Baylor as fans of Art Briles and Art Briles' offense and that style of football. So Rule comes in, and there's going to be a transition because the players on this team were not recruited to play in an I-form offense.
Right.
The fit isn't truly there, so it's going to take him a year or two at least to even get enough of his players in there to where they can really start doing and being fits to what he wants to do. And I don't know how much patience the fan base will have, and even some of the people in charge at the school are going to have, if Baylor's once again, you know, winning four or five games a year and not going to bowl games. Because I honestly think that as good of a coach as Matt Rhule is, I expect Baylor to take a significant step back as it goes through this transition. So hopefully he gets the runway to do what he needs to do to get his style going. Because I honestly think that if given time, Baylor will once again be a good football team in the Big 12, and it will be a team that does things a lot differently than the rest of the Big 12, which is always fun to watch.
Yeah, so how's this for complicated? So if Art Briles doesn't come, then they don't build that new stadium and get the huge investment in all those facilities. And if they don't have that new stadium and all those facilities, then I would give Matt Rhule even less of a chance to get them back. That's where I would be like, ah, man, good luck, buddy. But this is going to be some of these like 3-4 win kind of seasons. And, you know, maybe that's where Iowa State steals a couple of those wins. Like Texas Tech starts to get it rolling again. But because they've still got that, I'm going to give them a puncher's chance. I like it. I think that, Temple is hard to win at. There's nothing about the game experience at the link that looks particularly in the spirit of college football. Like, you got to really, really like football to get out there and get juiced up in that atmosphere. And so I'm going to give them a chance, but I agree with you. The days of winning the Big 12 are done, but I think that because of the work that Briles did, he'll still be able to recruit. It'll just be different kinds of players.
Yeah, and if he gets enough time, I mean, if you just look at the way the NFL draft works, you know, the Big 12 did, compared to the rest of Power 5, was awful as far as players being drafted this year.
Right.
But having a nice I-form pro-style offense is appealing to a lot of NFL teams. So it might actually help in recruiting down the road that he is playing more of a style that's more traditional as far as the NFL is concerned. It might help them get players to the NFL more so than they already were, at least outside of skill positions.
A couple of successful coaches at the Group of Five level making the jump to the Power Five, along with Matt Rhule: Tom Herman at Texas, Jeff Brohm at Purdue, PJ Fleck at Minnesota. Let's start first with Tom Herman. There's no question about the investment that's behind him. What are you expecting for Tom Herman, let's say, for the first like 2 years?
I would not be. I think this year Texas might be better than a lot of people would typically expect. I understand that Charlie Strong, you know, lost his job because he didn't do good enough to keep the job, as far as some people there were concerned. Although it could also just been that Tom Herman was suddenly available. It wasn't really have anything to do with Charlie Strong. But I think the cupboard has a bit more talent in it than you might expect. So Herman coming in, I think, is inheriting a pretty talented team. And in a Big 12 where Oklahoma and Oklahoma State are still going to be strong, but after that, there's kind of a power vacuum of somebody looking to step up and become that third best team. I think that could be Texas this year.
Nine wins.
I think Tom Herman... Yeah, I think that I do not rule it out. 9 wins, probably more 8-like, but still. And Herman will get all the credit for it, while a lot of it will still have to do with Charlie Strong. So I would not be surprised at all if they have a very solid season this year and are competing for a Big 12 title again within 2 to 3 years.
It's like last year they were 7 or 8 wins good, but the circus off the field, like where the whole team is showing up to Charlie Strong's press conference in a sign of solidarity. I mean, like the extra distractions that were going on, you know, I'm going to say that that attributed to 1 to 2 losses. So if they were like a 7 to 8 win team that, you know, all of a sudden got knocked down, they're probably still a 7 or 8 win team. And then I'm going to flip it the other way and say that they might get that new coach bump and they flirt with 8 or 9. And as we've said before, and I want to make sure that we go on record with this one, what do we know about Tom Herman? Well, we think he's going to beat Oklahoma and lose to Iowa State or Kansas State.
Yeah, exactly. And I mean, the important thing to remember here, too, is that it's still Texas. And there are some programs that even when they have bad runs like Texas has had, Texas is still one of those programs that can rebound really quickly.
What about in the Big Ten?
There's reason to be optimistic.
Yeah, obviously. All right, so what about like P.J. Fleck at Minnesota? I mean, love P.J. Fleck. But the buzz of rowing the boat is going to need some wins to get sparked again.
It's one thing when you're doing it at Western Michigan. Now you're doing it in, you know, the Big Ten. And Minnesota, to me, is probably a really good fit for Fleck. And I still, though, I don't know what the ceiling truly is. Because I think that, frankly, Minnesota was doing pretty well under Jerry Kill. And Minnesota did pretty well under Tracy Clays after Kill stepped down. And I think that's really about as good as Minnesota is going to do. That being said, the way that Jerry Kill and Clays recruited, P.J. Fleck can improve on the recruiting.
Yeah.
P.J. Fleck showed at Western Michigan that he can recruit well, and he was doing it then to a MAC school. Now he's going to be recruiting to a Big Ten school in a very nice, underrated city, mind you. It's, yes, it gets cold during the winter, but Minneapolis is a very nice city. So there is definitely room to improve. It's just I don't know if I would say P.J. Fleck is ever going to get Minnesota to a level where it's winning Big Ten West division titles and is going to Indy to play for a Big Ten title every other year. But I do think that P.J. Fleck could have some success at Minnesota and turn it into an even, you know, more high-profile job down the road.
Man, Minnesota's just got a pair of hot stars out here in these revenue sports.
Yeah, but they just re-upped Pitino yesterday, didn't they?
Yeah, Richard Pitino and P.J. Fleck, you're looking at a pair of, like, rising stars in the industry. And if you're Minnesota, you're just like, well, 3 good years and he might leave.
And you know what, though? If Fleck is there for 3 years and he has 3 outstanding years and leaves, that it's
Minnesota,
an awesome
Minnesota
thing for
should
Minnesota.
Be like, good, worth it. Absolutely worth it.
It was totally worth it.
Yeah.
Because, I mean, the Big Ten West, it has Wisconsin, it has Nebraska, but it's, you know, it's open. There is cracks in there to sneak in.
What about Jeff Brohm's Purdue program? Are they going to be able to spread it out and get Joe Tillerish?
I hope so.
That would be fun, right?
I'm an unabashed Brohm lover.
Oh.
So I just, again, it's one of those situations where I hope he gets the time because he's going to need it. He's a very good coach, but that Purdue team he's inheriting is not just a quick rehab. You know what I mean?
Well, where'd you put him? All right, so where'd you put him on your coach rankings? Like, did you give him credit for Western Kentucky?
Yes. He's at 43 on my rankings.
Ooh, you are a Brohm lover.
I'm unabashed. I would get a T-shirt with Jeff Brohm's face on it. You know what I mean?
Listeners, we need to get Tom a T-shirt with Jeff Brohm's face on it. Unabashed Brohm lover.
I will wear it. I love his offense because he just adjusts. You know, he has what he wants to do, but based on his personnel, he's one of those coaches that isn't forcing his players to his style. He adapts his style to his players. and he's smart enough to know how to run many different types and do many different things and just take advantage of what he has, which is why I think Purdue is a team this year that could maybe sneak up and pull off an upset or two, or at least be like a huge pain in the butt in a couple games. You know, like one of those games where it takes Ohio State to the fourth quarter and it's a one score game until Ohio State finally gets the one play it needs to put it away.
Dude, the nine game Big Ten schedule leaves a lot of pain in the butt games for like an Ohio State or Michigan. Like a team that is obviously considering itself a national title contender from the moment it sets out the season, like there are going to be some really, really tough wins if you're going to be able to get through that because of teams like Purdue.
Yeah, and I mean, I think this year at best you're probably looking at a 3-win team, but it's going to be a much better team. You're just watching Purdue, you're going to understand compared to what you saw the last few years that okay, this team is already better. It's not maybe not getting a ton of wins, but it's a better football team than it has been. And I think that in the Big Ten West, Jeff Brohm is going to eventually, if given the time, turn Purdue into a team that maybe doesn't get quite to where it was in the Tiller Breeze days, but is at least a team going to bowl games on a regular basis.
Yeah, and that wasn't where they were.
No, they were far, far away from that.
they were a great minor league system for SEC quarterbacks. They were doing the good work of training them before sending them off to, you know, the major leagues of Florida and LSU.
Teary goodbyes, putting them on the trains and waving, no, you gonna get. You be good.
Oh, man. All right. Well, Tom, make sure that you prepare your mentions for when all of the listeners eventually flood them for when this the coach ranking gets put out. Be on the lookout for it. I think it will be coming out next week. And we might, next time we link up, we might say a word or two on the final tally, see if there's any surprises. But it sounds like you and I are assuming we're looking at the same picture. The top looks clear. The bottom guys are maybe a little bit unproven, and there's a whole lot of middle.
Yeah, a whole lot of personal preference in the middle.
Whole lot of personal preference. He is Tom Fornelli. Make sure you follow him on Twitter at Tom Fornelli. I am Chip Patterson. Follow me at Chip_Patterson. Tom, thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir.